Okay, so our next speaker is Dr. Ray Price, who is the principal consultant of The Price is Right, which is a scientific editing, writing, and business development service. Dr. Price is also a Vandy alum. He earned his PhD here in pharmacology, followed by an MBA in entrepreneurship and strategy from the European Institute of Business Administration in France. In addition to science writing, Dr. Price has experience in pharma and biotech in Japan, France, and the U.S., and today he'll be sharing perspectives from some of his experiences as a PhD MBA. So, welcome.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here with you guys, and as she said, I've been tasked with kind of combining, let's say, some part of, I'm in the writing section, so I'm going to talk about that a little bit because it's what I've done for the past 6 or 7 months in a full-time role, but also some aspects of how I made a transition internationally. And first of all, in terms of thinking about what you want to do with the rest of your life, I think one of the things that I would want you to come away with, both my talk and maybe the rest of today, is to be encouraged in what you're doing, that you have a lot of opportunities if you're in a master's program or a PhD. I mean, I think you get kind of jaded here where all your friends have PhDs or are working on them, but in the real world, outside, and it's actually, people actually respect that, apparently. And so it's not something that to really take for granted. And the degree is recognized globally. I mean, it's not something you have to be, you have to be, licensed to practice or things. I mean, it's something that you can carry with you. And I think that gives you an element of mobility that's really hard to match compared to law degrees or having to be board certified in medicine. And I think another point to take away is that it's applicable to other professions as well. I mean, I won't go into that today, but really, I think by the diversity of the types of talks here, hopefully you get an idea of that. Just to give a brief background, I did my degree here in pharmacology. I went and worked as a research scientist in a company called Astellas. At the time, it was Fujisawa. And that was right out of my PhD. So one of the benefits that you can find from working internationally is you can skip that whole postdoc silliness. And doing that, because in Japan, they don't really have that as part of their training program. So they hired me on as a research scientist. And then when I was able to come back, it made negotiations for title a lot better because I had already had that established salary and benefits and so on. So one reason you can put in your hat of why you would want to study or work overseas. I came back to Seattle area, and worked for a company called Acucela. We were working in ophthalmology, and the CEO was Japanese, and all of the investors, all the VC investment was from Japan. So they wanted me to, I started off as a research scientist working in assay development, but within a couple of months moved into more of a business development, investor relations type of role, and really fell in love with the business side of science, and decided semi-permanently to leave the bench and explore what that can mean. Then I moved to Paris in 2007. I was recruited basically by a company that I had met with when I was a research scientist in Japan, and just kept in touch with them over a few years. I was recruited to work on a technology I had worked on when I was at Vanderbilt, but they wanted me to help with a venture capital round of fundraising, which we were going to do in the U.S. So really a chance, I thought, to integrate both the science, kind of technology development that I was interested in with a business, really expanding my experience in terms of fundraising and business development type work. Unfortunately, we planned that Series A round for the summer of 2008, which wasn't a good time in history to try to fundraise anywhere, and so ended up being let go in the fall, but started at a business school called INSEAD. It's based outside of Paris. And did an executive MBA program there. Another advantage potentially of studying abroad is I was a French employee. I qualified for French unemployment benefits, which are highly generous, and I strongly recommend if you can swing it. I even, hopefully maybe there's any Europeans in the audience, but I even had 5 weeks vacation from being unemployed. That's how good that was. The executive MBA program, I chose INSEAD in large part because of the international exposure. We had a campus and spent time on a campus in Paris, Singapore, and Abu Dhabi in the UAE. My cohort of 65 people, we had 30 different passports represented. So it was really diverse international cohort and fantastic experience. Not cheap, I would say, but especially when the euro-dollar exchange was at 1.6. Anyway, then since 2002, really, I started in Japan working on my own sort of as a hobby. I enjoyed the editing process. I wasn't a great writer. My advisor actually told me that in a number of meetings. You're not the greatest writer in the world. But I showed her. So started doing the... because in my scientist role, there was about 5,000 employees in Japan, and there was 4 non-Japanese. So basically, by default, got asked to read and edit a lot of abstracts and posters, and even anyone that studies abroad, you've sort of learned differences in culture. I had to be the kind of debrief for how to tip taxi drivers and how much do you give bellhops, and basically in Japan, where there's no tipping even at restaurants. So what are the rules for different situations? But anyway, started editing then, and then I've done that full-time since January when I came back after finishing the MBA. I think ground rules, the principles I think are really good, and I think a lot of people have shared a lot of those. And anecdotes may or may not be good. Any scientist knows an N of 1 is not necessarily helpful. But if a number of them point in the right direction or point you in a way that is helpful, then take what's good from it and spit out the rest. So the same thing with generalizations and specific examples. I guess it's a little more formal. We'll put questions at the end or afterwards. Please feel free to approach me either this afternoon or the breakfast tomorrow. I'll be here till Thursday, actually. And even though I say it's for you, it's actually just for me because you can't ask questions. So. And I think that I couched my, in terms of thinking how to approach this, I've tried to take a very high-level view of what a real job looks like and how that can apply to an international position and knowing that you want to study abroad or work abroad or how you can navigate those. I think that one of the first questions that people ask you is why and what do you want to do with that and what do you hope to accomplish. So I wanted to go through that actually more as a high-level view of kind of career planning and what that can look like. And then we'll start with where are you and where are you headed? What do you want? There's some details around that. First is the resume review. I'm going to go through a couple of pointers of, as a being a hiring manager in a previous company, things that we looked for, what it takes for you to be able to establish goals, and then as an individual, what you want out of your life and career. You only read the first page, and even the first half is really where it catches your attention or not. And being able to proofread, particularly if you're going for a writing position, if you're here, or an editor, if you have mistakes in your resume, that's a bad move. Some ways to structure that one of the poorer ones would be basically a list of positions, let's say, and what you actually, a very sterile and dry job description versus, let's say, what I call principles of good, of saying what your actual accomplishments were in there, maybe some what could be flowery language, but what you actually did in those positions in ways that are matching keywords in the job description or matching what the actual position is doing. So these are some ways that, and again, the slides will be available in some form afterwards, so you can take time to look through it more. But basically, action words that are quantifiable, how you incorporate some of the soft skills, especially if you're moving away from kind of bench-type positions. I think you'll hear that communicates well verbally and in written form is going to be a constant in job descriptions. Other, working well in teams, how you deal with, unpleasant coworkers. Those are things that if you can incorporate those into your resume as well, that I think will help you get a lot more. It's not just applying, but it's getting, get interviews and experience and being able to talk to people. And then from the employer's perspective, it's if I hire you, what's in it for me? Your experience and background's interesting, but really it's about me as a manager in the company. And being able to articulate what it is specifically that you bring to that company, what's unique about you, and being able to succinctly and articulately explain that in what's called an elevator pitch, basically the term that comes from if you're stuck in or riding in an elevator with someone who can hire you, how in 30 seconds can you articulate what you want in your career, what you've done, and what value you can provide to them. Some other things on the resume side of being able to put your presence out there, whether it's LinkedIn or resumes or online job boards. One thing that I've used in mine is a qualification summary. Again, people usually read the first half in detail and then maybe skim the rest, and so putting that at the top of what you've done, what you have accomplished, and what you're looking to do next. A skills profile is the same thing. It also helps you nowadays a lot of companies will use software to match up resumes with job descriptions. So if you have keywords in there, that can help you, search optimization types of software. And then an endorsements section as well. So I have one where I have basically short references of people that I've worked with in the past. And I know that in one case, I know for sure that one of my endorsements led to me getting a phone interview. So it's stuff that's worked for me. These are not necessarily things that you would see sort of globally recommended, but anyway, in terms of getting yourself noticed, they may be useful. But I think for me, this was part of a career session that we did at INSEAD. I mean, I think helped me sort of consolidate a lot of my experience in exploring different career paths. I mean, I think traditionally we're told, oh, you pick a target 10 or 15 years out. Let's say it's vice president of research in a mid-sized pharma company, and you work your way back, right? So, well, if I'm going to do that, I need to have find a scientist position and then manage scientists and things. But to me, it was not a very satisfying sort of explanation of my career progress anyway. I mean, if you'd asked me 5 years ago, what would I be doing now? It would not be this. So there has to be some interaction of, not just sort of what is available and out there in terms of external factors and market demand and who you know in your network, as well as your expertise. I mean, here, obviously, your training and your education and skills, but also something that you're enthusiastic about. And this part, I think that there is something to be said for experience. I mean, being able to know what is exciting or what generates enthusiasm in your interests, what strengths you have. I mean, without the experience I had in Seattle of working on the business development side, it would not have been something I would have chosen to pursue. So anyway, thinking about that is not necessarily a linear progression that is immutable and predestined, and these are the things I'm going to do, but that there is some interaction of these three and that these are changeable as well. And that your ideal career is somewhere in the intersection of those three things. So although I sort of trashed the linear idea, I mean, for me, it does help for people, particularly when you're networking and when you're interacting with folks, well, what do you want? I mean, if you say, I'm finishing my PhD, but I don't really know what I want, it's not something that I can do as part of your network. It's hard for me to understand how I can help you achieve that, right? So being able to say, well, where is what I want to be? I want to, work as my own business development consultant, let's say 15 or 20 years out. So to do that, I would need to have some experience as a vice president or senior director of business development, some mixture of big and small company experience, a network of business development leaders. So 5 years, what does that mean for me? I would need to make a move to a new company to have a good deal sheet. So what does that mean for this year, right? So be able to think maybe, in terms of, and again, this is changeable, right? I wouldn't have said this was my career pinnacle 5 years ago, and be able to work backwards from that. And then how do you find a goal? I think part of it is informational interviewing, attending things like this, just even know what's out there, know to be a patent agent or to be a business development person or a medical writer. The Sciences Next Wave, a library, career services are good. And sometimes it may be easier or at least satisfying to eliminate possibilities. So let's say the patent agents, I don't want to go to law school, so I can't afford or I don't have time to do that. So, it may be easier or at least satisfying to feel like you're accomplishing something in that sense. And then to keep your options open. Again, I never would have said I wanted to work on the business side 5 years ago. In terms of marketing yourself, I think there is some discussion around balancing being pigeonholed or being an inch wide and a mile deep in some technology or therapeutic area versus being able to know a mile wide and an inch deep. How do you balance those two things? Some diversification is good, particularly as it complements your science. So obviously today it's writing and editing or grant writing. If you can have opportunities with your PI to edit grants for them, or if it's programming or even using Microsoft Office well, I mean, there are things, graphic design, there are things that you can complement scientific training with that will help you in real life. And for example, in my case, I had a three-month NSF fellowship to visit Japan in the summer of 99, and obviously had some grantsmanship, being able to win that international experience, and then I did my internship was in the industry, so I got to bring all those three things together just from a summer experience. So, but you may be thinking, oh, this is good for me when I graduate, or once I'm, you know, onto my postdoc, or when I finish my postdoc. But in fact, I think there are things that you can do in your current situation to help you create opportunities. One is to really evaluate what is the end, what do you hope to get out of your experience here. I mean, obviously, if it's a PhD, that's a good one. But, you know, what if it's a postdoc, when is a good time to cut off and leave, or what milestones or signposts will be there to let me know that this is what I need to do. I think if there are things, you know, you have to evaluate this for yourself, but talk to your boss. I did a lot of, my advisor was really good about, she let me go, I got to go to Japan for 3 months and did an internship at a biotech company. And those things, you know, it doesn't hurt to ask in my experience anyway, or to at least open discussion. And then being able to anticipate when you will, you know, be able to move on, whether that's your defense or your fellowship is up, and don't be, you know, just be aware of those things and don't be caught off guard when you hit that time. And then networking obviously is the best way, I think, to create opportunities in your own situation, coming again to things like this and meeting other people, going to conferences. And for me, I mentioned I had I did an internship in San Diego at this biotech company, and in 3 months, it was a dissertation enhancement award from Vanderbilt, so they paid for me to live in La Jolla. It was rough. But in about 3 months, had a year's worth of data and came back and was able to defend fairly early in the process, and they paid for a rental car that was a Mustang. That really rocked. So you have your current situation, but then what's next? How do I find opportunities that are out there, or to something to move to next? I think it has probably been beaten into you guys, but networking is really, I think, the most valuable way to do that, cultivating that. As Chaz mentioned, using recruiters that you trust. There can be some, you know, there are different types of recruiters that recruit for different positions. It doesn't make sense. If you know what type of position you're going to go for, they will be, you know, if they don't work in that field, it doesn't make sense to build relationships with them. I think being able to, if you're uncertain about whether something could be interesting or not, I think it actually has a lot more interest and benefit in checking it out versus saying, oh, it's a risky proposition and a waste of my time. And that there is, like in the rest of life, advancement has its price. There's always a trade-off of, you know, do I want more money, or, you know, live in New York versus having time with my family or my kids, or that those things are always going to have to be a balance. In terms of specific suggestions for cultivating your network, keeping in touch with people, setting up some kind of archiving or management system. I use Outlook and, you know, message reminders, and there's categories and things I won't go into now, but there are ways to be able to set up reminders to contact people if you have a job change or a publication that comes out. When I was in my scientist position, I would, you know, reading literature and would find papers that people I'd worked with on my committee or whatever in grad school, and I set up alerts to be able to alert me to reading them, and just would write a note saying, I noticed your paper. So it's not just about, oh, can you help me find a job, but that there's some interaction around that process. LinkedIn, I use that a lot and found it extremely helpful. And then there's some other, online tools, but really in-person networking is ideal, is the best to be able to, particularly I would say at a younger, you know, folks where you may not have the experience, but someone can assess your personality and fit and communication skills and things in a way that your resume may or may not be able to communicate very well. Being active in local and national chapters, so Society for Neuroscience, being able to, this year I volunteered, that's not true. Anyway, to be able to volunteer at a conference, for example, a registration, so that you can, you know, let's say get a discount on registration and you get to meet folks as they come in. There's some creative ways to get access even if you're not going to present. And then I think one important point on the networking is sharing information. So there's the idea of scarcity. A scarcity mentality says that, well, if I help you, then there's going to be less pie for me, right? If it's, you know, edit your grant, then maybe I won't get mine. Versus an abundance mentality that says, well, there's plenty of pie to go around, or the pie will make the pie bigger somehow by being creative. And I think you will have a much more success in the latter in working from an abundance mentality than scarcity. And one example of that specifically was I helped to host the pharmacology student forum here 2000 something. and they found a guy that, you know, in a relationship that continued both in Hawaii and in Japan. So you never know who's going to be your, you know, by hosting him around, you never know who's going to be your ticket to what's next. And again, there isn't, there is a trade-off of what, there's never a convenient time to change. You're always wanting to be open to opportunities, and there's always going to be trade-offs in doing that. And specifically for the BioCortec position in Paris, it was a meeting in Japan in 2004, and there was 3 years for the company to get funding. And then in September 2007, right before I was laid off, my mentor suggested I apply to INSEAD. So there are certain, you know, let's say turning points that don't seem all that dramatic in at the beginning, but may turn out to be important. So I want to acknowledge the Pharmalogics recruiting and the INSEAD, where I did the MBA, for some of the slides and content. I'm always recruiting freelance editors. I work a lot with outside companies to do that mostly. So if you want to send me a LinkedIn invite with a note and your thoughts on the talk, then my email's there. Thanks a lot.